going to be speaking while visiting from Canto 1, Chapter 11. And this morning we'll be speaking from verses 16 through 19. Well, we're only going to be speaking through part of 16, 17, 18, 16 and 17, because I spoke on them already. There's a series of verses. The section, chapter 11, is Krishna's entering into Dwarka. He's returning to Dwarka. And where has he been? He went to Hastinapur. And we know from the prayers of Queen Kunti, Krishna has relatives in both places. The Yadu dynasty is now based in Dwarka. But previously, where was the Yadu dynasty? In Mathura. But with the attack, simultaneous attack of Jarasandha and Kaliyavana, two massive armies from two different directions ganging up on the Yadu dynasty kings. What did Krishna do? He said, Balaram, you hold them off. I'm going to take all the members of the Yadu dynasty to one of our ancestral homes in Dwarka, and he had Vishvakarma make a immediate city, and by mystic power transferred everybody situated in their homes, went back to meet Kaliyavana and Jarasandha. And after Kaliyavana was turned into ashes by Muchukunda in a cave, he then came back to the battlefield and with Balaram, as if afraid of Jarasandha, they fled the battlefield. And Jarasandha was thinking, at last, finally, after being totally humiliated so many times by Krishna, now I'm defeating Krishna. And Krishna and Balaram went up on a tall mountain and jumped from the tall mountain and had a nice ride. And then they went back to Dwarka. So Krishna had remained in Dwarka for some time. And on a couple of occasions, Krishna left Dwarka. One of those occasions was Krishna received word that the Pandavas were killed. They were dead. The Pandavas weren't dead. But everybody thought they were dead, except Krishna and Balaram. The house of Lak. Right? The house of Lak? Big fire. Duryodhana thought, at last, the Pandavas are dead. Now the kingdom is ours, undisputed. So Krishna and Balaram went to attend the funeral of the Pandavas. So when he was away, the citizens of Dwarka were in great anxiety. While Krishna was away, something terrible happened in Dwarka. Was that something that was terrible that happened? Krishna's father-in-law was killed. in his sleep. So Satyabhama, the daughter of Satrajit, went to Hastinapur to request Krishna, please come back. But while Krishna was in Hastinapur, it just so happened that Drupad was arranging for the Swayamvar of Draupadi. And he arranged a very, very excellent competition that only one person, maybe two, could possibly win for Draupadi's Swayamvar. And sure enough, that expert, most expert of all archers, Arjun, won the competition and received Draupadi as his wife. So Krishna was away from Dwarka. While Krishna was away from Dwarka, he was with the Kuru dynasty. And the Pandavas were actually part of the Kuru dynasty. But his other family members were in Dwarka. So when Krishna was away, Kunti explains, from Dwarka, then all of her father and all of the family members on her father's side were feeling great separation from Krishna. And that was difficult for Kunti to know that they were feeling great separation from Krishna. But then when Krishna was going back to Dwarka, then her own sons were feeling great separation from Krishna. It was too difficult. Whichever direction Krishna went, some part of her family was having great pain of separation. So chapter 10 and chapter 11 are on this very elevated subject, already in the first canto, on meeting and separation from Krishna. Sambhog is meeting, and Vipralamba is separation, or the word that's used in the 10th chapter is viraha. Viraha means separation. So Krishna is now returning back to Dwarka, and so the residents of Hastinapur are feeling great separation. And the residents of Dwarka, who have been feeling great separation, are now coming back to life as if dead, coming back to life, because Krishna is returning. And so that whole scene, the cultural part of how to receive a great personality, the feelings of deep affection that exist between the pure devotee and the Supreme Lord, the ways in which Krishna would reciprocate with each according to their position. When the Kurukshetra battle was over, the residents of Dwarka understood Krishna will be returning very soon. He was gone for months. But Krishna will be back very soon. But that wasn't to happen, because Yudhisthira intervened and petitioned Krishna, please remain some days longer. And those days longer became 3 months. So the residents of Dwarka were very anxious. Not in an ordinary kind of anxious, but transcendentally anxious. Yugayatam nimeshena chakshusha pravisayatam. One moment, let's do some math. One moment was like years. And there were a lot of moments over a period of 6 months. How many years passed? They were in great separation. Because of their attachment to Krishna, they had to endure this pain of separation. So when Krishna was now going to return, messengers went ahead. Krishna is going to return. So that intensified their anticipation even more. Surely he's going to come now. But when exactly, they didn't know. But soon, not soon enough. They're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And Krishna was coming with the two Akshohini divisions of soldiers. He didn't need any soldiers to accompany. It was just part of the celebration and the way of serving Krishna that Yudhisthira now had at his disposal, because he's again king. So use the treasury of the king. Elephants and chariots and foot soldiers and all of the military strength accompanying Krishna. And Krishna got to the outside of the city and he blew on his transcendental conch shell. And everybody knew, Krishna's finally come. They just stopped whatever they were doing. They were in the middle of eating. They were in the middle of sleeping. They were in the middle of taking care of their families. They just dropped everything and ran to receive Krishna. And some had the nice service of staying back and decorating the details of the decorations and everything. So the verse that we're discussing is, first to come to receive him were the elders, the senior most personalities of Dwarka, the king. The king went to greet Krishna. And that king was Ugrasena, and the description of his life. Vasudeva, Krishna's father, went to receive Krishna. Balaram went to receive Krishna. Balaram's the elder brother. But Balaram wasn't, he wasn't in Hastinapur, because he wasn't going to take part in the battle. So he went on pilgrimage. And he ended up back in Dwarka. So when Krishna returned, Balaram was there. Balaram came to see him. And then Krishna's sons. So that's what we'll talk about today. Krishna's sons. Three of the sons are mentioned. And I think this group will be better at knowing who's who and what's what than the previous place where I discussed this. Pradyumna, Charudeshna, and Samba, their names are mentioned. So we're going to do a little who's who and what's what with Pradyumna. So when you hear of Pradyumna, the son of Krishna, please raise your hand and tell me some of the things that you think of when you think of Pradyumna, the son of Krishna. Yes? Krishna wanted the Pradyumna to be accepted. Oh yeah, from Nectar of Devotion. The mood of service of Pradyumna. That is, whatever Krishna wanted. If he didn't want, whatever Krishna wanted. If he wanted something that Krishna didn't want, then he wouldn't do. Because of his mood of service. Outstanding thought about Pradyumna. What else? Pradyumna. Go ahead. Speak up. Son of Rukmini. He's the eldest son of Rukmini. What else? Someone else. What else? I can't hear a word you're saying. Uh-huh. You know the whole story? There was a big fight with Shalva. Who was Shalva? He was a demon, a mystic demon. He could make a big airship that could fly in space and send down weapons, and then that spaceship would become invisible. He was a mystic demon. Big time, mega demon. And Pradyumna was fighting with him, and Pradyumna was hit by an arrow and he fell to the ground unconscious. So the chariot driver of Pradyumna, just to rescue Pradyumna's life, took him off the battlefield and revived him. And Pradyumna was so unhappy. Why have you done this? Better I died on the battlefield than leave the battlefield like this. Oh, what shame, what indignity. Take me back to the battlefield. So his chariot driver took him back to the battlefield, and Pradyumna destroyed Shalva, powerful fighter. You like fights, huh? The fight stories? Yeah, okay. What else about Pradyumna? Pradyumna, what do we know about Pradyumna? Other than the son of Rukmini, what else? Who was Pradyumna? Yes. He was Cupid. Do you know the whole story? Cupid was very proud. And he exhibited his pride before Lord Shiva. How beautiful were his features. So Lord Shiva turned him into ashes. Thus ended Kamadev, Cupid personified. So he again took birth. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. Some say, and it says right in the Bhagavatam, that he was a partial manifestation of Kamadev. But he's also a manifestation. He's Vishnu Tattva. Who else is he a manifestation of? Pradyumna. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. So Krishna and Balaram and Pradyumna and Aniruddha, the chapter of Yuha appearing in Krishna's pastimes. Pradyumna. So he took birth as the first son of Rukmini and Krishna. And while he was still in the maternity room, 10 days old, a demon came and kidnapped Pradyumna. 10 days old. What a demon. Poor Rukmini. She was so distressed. And the demon threw the child in the ocean. And the child was swallowed by a big fish. And the big fish was caught by a fisherman. And when the fisherman was cleaning the fish, opening up the fish, he saw inside a little baby. He was astonished. So he was doing some service in the kitchen of none other than Shambhara, the thief. And the thief, Shambhara, had engaged the former wife of Kamadev, who is known as Mayavati, as his cook. And so the fisherman sold the fish to the kitchen, the king to Shambhara's kitchen, and then the cook was given charge of the small boy. But that was his former wife. And as the child grew to maturity, she could understand, this isn't just some child, this is my former husband. But she was acting like the mother of this small baby. And so when he became mature of age, with her eyes, she was looking at the boy, now a young man, in a lustful way. And the boy said, "My dear mother, this isn't proper. You're my mother." And she said, "No, actually, I'm not your mother. I'm your former wife. And this Shambhara, he kidnapped you while you were in the womb, while we're near the maternity room of Rukmini. You're Rukmini's son, and you're my former husband. We should get married. And you should kill the Shambhara." Another battle scene. Pradyumna fought with Shambhara and destroyed him. And Pradyumna came back to the palace of Rukmini and Krishna in Dwarka. And Rukmini was so attracted to this young boy. She felt such maternal affection, and he looked so much like Krishna. But because she was married to Krishna, she could tell the difference between Krishna and a likeness of Krishna, her son Pradyumna. And so Mayavati disclosed the whole thing. "This is your son." So Rukmini, there's a whole chapter describing. Pradyumna was again reunited with Rukmini, and it was a wonderful festival. So Pradyumna was accompanying Vasudeva and Ugrasena and Balaram to go and receive Krishna. And Pradyumna had 9 younger brothers, because each of the queens of Krishna had 10 sons. So Pradyumna was the eldest. And another one of the brothers that's mentioned here is Charudeshna. Charudeshna. There's not a whole chapter in the Bhagavatam about Charudeshna, but he was a great hero, a very powerful fighter. He went with Krishna and Balaram to attend the funeral of the Pandavas, and so he was also present at the Swayambhar of Draupadi. Charudeshna. And he was a great warrior, like his elder brother Pradyumna and his father Krishna. There's no detail, but there's one big, big demon that he fought with and killed. It's mentioned in the purport. Vividhinaka. Vividhinaka. And the third that's mentioned is Samba. Samba. So some more question answer. When you think of Samba, what do you think of? There's a few very important features of Samba's life. Who is Samba the son of? Jambavati, the eldest of the sons of Jambavati. What else? He married the daughter of Duryodhana. Yes, he did. Very curious. Do you know the circumstance? A little bit? Yeah, but before, we got to go much further back. There was a Swayamvar for Lakshmana, who was the daughter of Duryodhana. And Sambha went to the Swayamvar, and Sambha won the hand of Lakshmana. And he was heading off with the hand of Lakshmana, and Lakshmana too. And Duryodhana was very angry, just like when Rukmini was kidnapped, or when Draupadi was won by Swayamvar. There was a big fight. It was a big fight. Very much like Abhimanyu. They ganged up on him. Six big, powerful generals beat up on him. Fighting, and Sambha was holding him off, and he was like Abhimanyu, intense fighter. But they subdued him, and they tied him up, just like Bali Maharaj was tied up. They tied him up with ropes, or Drupad was tied up and put in prison in Hastinapur. He didn't do anything wrong. He won the hand of Draupadi in Swayamvara ceremony and put in prison. When King Ugrasena found out Sambha is in the prison of Duryodhana, this is an intolerable insult. Gather the entire army of the Yadu dynasty and we will make war on the Kauravas. This was before the Kurukshetra battle. It was going to be a Kurukshetra battle before there was a Kurukshetra battle. The entire Yadu dynasty army. And Ugrasena was serious. So they started making all these preparations, and Balaram said, no, it's not necessary. I have this very special relationship with Duryodhana. After all, I taught him how to fight with a club. Let me try. I'll take some ministers with me. The army can be waiting in the background, but let me see if I can make a peaceful settlement. So he appealed to King Ugrasena, who agreed. So Balaram went to make a peaceful settlement. And then what happened? The ministers of Duryodhana came to meet Balaram. And they were so pleased. Oh, you come to visit our palace, our capital city. How fortunate. You are such a great personality. What has brought you here? What is the occasion? Balaram said, I'm glad you asked. I've come to ask you to release Sambha from prison and that he should marry Lakshmana, the daughter of Duryodhana. Oh no! Duryodhana would never hear of that. We'll have to go back and tell him what your purpose was. I'm sure he won't agree. And they were right. Duryodhana didn't agree. Balaram became transcendentally angry. So he took his plow and started dragging the entire city. An entire city, not just like a house or a palace. The entire city of Hastinapur was being dragged by his plow to dump it in the river and finish it. Duryodhana came to his senses. Uh-oh. We picked the wrong person to say no to. We've offended Balaram. Quick, ministers, take all the gifts and appease Balaram. Whatever you have to do, we're finished. So Balaram was very pleased. Sambha was released. Lakshmana and Sambha were married. And they all lived happily ever after. What else? There's another whole chapter about Samba in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. The destruction of the Yadu dynasty. Samba was responsible for that. Samba, the son of Krishna. What did he do? He, along with others, young, because when Samba married, he was still quite young. And a group of young men, they came before some sage, group of sages, and they were making fun of them. But they did it in a very kind of cute way. They had Samba dress up as a woman and put a big lump of iron by his abdomen. And looking the other way in a high-sounding voice, he asked the sages, "You're very expert in astrology. Can you tell me, will this be a boy or a girl? What is the future of this child?" The sages could understand they were making fun of them. Said, "We'll tell you about the future of that child. That child will be the destruction of the Yadu dynasty for offending the Brahmanas. You sons of the Yadu dynasty, you're so proud. You will be destroyed by this very so-called child making fun of us in this way. Be off with you." Samba and the other young men, they went to King Ugrasena. "King Ugrasena, this terrible thing happened. We were making fun of the sages, and the sages cursed us that this lump of iron, see, this will be the destruction of the Yadu dynasty." So what did Ugrasena do? He called his ministers. What to do? The curse of the sages can't be checked. Ministers advised, take that lump of iron, grind it down into the finest powder, and throw the powder into the sea. So that's what they did, following the indication of the ministers. The powder was thrown off into the sea, surrounding Dwarka. The powder washed to the shore and gathered around the roots of some reeds that were growing by the Prabhas Kshetra, by the sea. All of this is by Krishna's arrangement, and then Krishna induced the Yadu dynasty members to have some festival, some function at Prabhas Kshetra. And in part of that festival, they took some rice wine, and by Krishna's inducing them, they took too much rice wine and became intoxicated, and in a sporting way, they began some combat, as Kshatriyas will do, and they took these rods that were growing from the sea that are now hard like iron, and began having stick fights, and the stick fights turned into a real fight, and the Yadu dynasty destroyed one another. Samba was such a fighter that it's described here that he died at the hand of King Bhoja, very powerful fighter. So the whole Yadu dynasty was destroyed because of this joke of Samba. But it was all part of Krishna's plan, because Krishna's plan was that he was going to soon leave the world, having completed his pastimes, and he didn't want to leave those who had come to assist him in his pastimes behind. So to take them with him, who could bring them with him except they themselves destroy themselves. Prabhupada also describes that through descendancy over a period of time, those who would be the sons or the descendants of the Yadu dynasty, they would be influenced by the age of Kali. And they would be so powerful that nothing could stop them, but influenced by the age of Kali, it would be a terrible thing. So Krishna removed them. It was Krishna's plan. And Samba was the agent of that. So, the next verse describes these members of Dwaraka, residents of Dwaraka, hastened toward Krishna on chariots with brahmanas bearing flowers. Before them were elephants, emblems of good fortune. Conch shells and bugles were sounded and Vedic hymns were chanted. Thus they offered their respects, which were saturated with affection. Big festivity, Prabhupada indicates, when receiving a great personality like Lord Krishna. We just were at the airport and they were receiving somebody, Krishna Rao from the Congress Party. Or something, somebody from the Congress Party. It wasn't like receiving Krishna. Motorcycles. No elephants. No conch shells. No musicians, no brahmanas bearing flowers and singing Vedic mantras. It was a Kali Yuga thing. Just a traffic jam. Just a nuisance. But all of it's the emphasis on the opulence, because Dwaraka bears the full opulence of Vaikuntha, or displays it. And so the opulences that were manifested, exhibited before Krishna, were all natural, beautiful opulences. And the most important thing was that it was all offered with great love. It wasn't this passion, yelling, slogans, and, you know, what a scene. Very, very beautiful. Brahmanas reciting verses from Vedic literatures. One of the ways to perform yajna is on each of the corners there's brahmanas who are reciting Vedic hymns, or in the absence of Vedic hymns, then reciting from different scriptures, along with the priest who's performing the yajna and chanting our Mangala Charana prayers when elaborate ceremonies are done. Sometimes it's done like that. Prabhupada writes, such a program of reception is full of sincerity on the part of both the receiver and the received. And text 19, I'll just finish this one quickly, although it's a delicate one, an important and a delicate one. At the same time, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes began to proceed on various vehicles. It wasn't motorcycles, it was palanquins. They were very eager to meet the Lord, and their beautiful faces were decorated with dazzling earrings, which enhanced the beauty of their foreheads. So in the purport, Prabhupada, there's three paragraphs. The first and third paragraph are speaking about sometimes by fate, by the tricks of chance, by circumstance, He uses those phrases. One has some not very commendable occupation. However, Krishna doesn't look at one's occupation, commendable or otherwise. Krishna looks at the sincerity of devotion. So these ladies that had this occupation by tricks of chance, obliged to adopt a profession which is not very adorable in society, but their devotion was not hampered by that occupation. They were, the indication is given here, pure devotees. Now, it's not that everybody in Dwarka, this is surprising, it's not that everybody in Dwarka was a pure devotee, just like Satrajit. Satrajit's residence was outside Dwarka. Doesn't say exactly where outside, but something outside. And when he got the Shamataka jewel, he came and made his residence in Dwarka. And he wasn't a pure devotee, far from it. Or when Akrura, forget the other's name, who's the other person's name, Kritavarma. Yeah. He committed murder. Right in Dwarka. So the idea, then later there was drought and famine in Dwarka. Because the Shamantaka jewel wasn't there. And they thought it was, oh, because Akura isn't there. But Krishna doesn't need the Shamantaka jewel to have regular rain and proper production of crops. There were apparent anomalies. Prabhupada described like this once to a devotee named Atreya Rishi in New York during the time of one particular president. We were preaching very actively in Manhattan. We were living in Brooklyn and preaching actively in Manhattan. And one really high quality accountant from Iran, his name was Farmars Attar, became interested in Krishna consciousness. So he started coming regularly and he met Prabhupada. And he was overwhelmed with Prabhupada's purity, and so he started getting more involved with the temple. And when he started, because he was an accountant, he started looking at the bookkeeping of the temple, and he saw, oh my God, what a mess. And so he wrote to Prabhupada saying, oh my God, what a mess. I mean, not those words, but this is disaster. They're spending way more than what they're bringing in, for starters. And they don't keep track of what's coming in and what's going out, so they don't know where they are. Now, what Prabhupada did was, he spoke a certain way to Farmars Attar, and he spoke a different way to the temple president. He really got in the case of the temple president. But what he said to Farmars Attar, who later became Atreya Rishi, and started an ISKCON center in Iran later on. He said to Atreya Rishi, very nice letter, he said, don't think that the spiritual world is utopia. Utopia? Utopia means where everything is perfect. The spiritual world is not utopia. Very sweet. Prabhupada wrote that even Krishna makes mistakes. When Krishna goes to the pasturing ground. Sometimes his mind is so much absorbed in thought of Srimati Radharani that he goes to milk a bull instead of a cow. The spiritual world is not utopia. Don't think like that. Do your best to serve Krishna in a sincere way, but don't become disappointed thinking that the spiritual world is utopia. Then he really got in the case of the temple president. Why are you not keeping books? Why are you spending more than what you're in? Why are you doing like this? He corrected the situation, but the spiritual world is not utopia. So even in Dwarka, there were men who were lusty. And rather than starting some improper relationship with someone's wife or some unmarried woman, there were official prostitutes in Dwarka. Prabhupada describes in this way. It's difficult to understand. Why would there be such a thing in Dwarka? But there was such a thing in Dwarka. But those persons were not ordinary persons. They were great devotees. Like Prabhupada tells the story, the Brahmana and the prostitute story. You know that story? It's one of these generic stories. Once upon a time, there was a Brahmana. And in the same neighborhood as the Brahmana, just down the street a little ways, was a prostitute. The Brahmana was always in his mind very agitated. What a terrible profession, this prostitute. The prostitute was thinking, how unfortunate I am. I have this awful profession. Maybe just by being in the proximity of this pure Brahmana, maybe one day I'll become elevated and released from this terrible profession. Oh, may I someday get the blessings of this wonderful Brahmana. The Brahmana was so absorbed in what the prostitute was doing that every time a man went to visit her, he went and put a stone by her door. So there was a little pile of stones, and he would meditate on how big the pile of stones was and how sinful is this woman. Now there's different versions of how it ends. One of the versions is a sage came to town, and the Brahmin asked, will I go back to Godhead after this life? And he said, no, you'll go to hell. Go to hell, I'm doing all my brahminical duties. And yes, but you're doing brahminical duties, but your mind is in the gutter. Your mind is always on the activities of the prostitute while you're doing your brahminical duties. And the same sage was asked by the prostitute, how many lives in hell will I have to bear before I can return to the spiritual world? And he said, oh, in your very next life you'll return to the spiritual world. Why? Because you're always thinking in a favorable way towards the Brahmana, thinking, when will I get the favor of the Brahmana? And although your activities are impure, your consciousness is very elevated. You simply want to please and serve those who are elevated souls. But very quickly you'll become virtuous, righteous, and return to the spiritual world. But it's not just our activities, but the consciousness behind our activities that determines our next destination. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, chajat ante kalevaram. Right? Whatever the mind is absorbed on, or absorbed in, chajatante, at the end of this life, when you give up the body, where is your mind? Or now, where is the mind? You may be doing nice activity, but if the mind is in a bad place, better not die. Better to fix the mind in the proper place. That's what we want. So, in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining, these are not, all the denizens of Dwaraka were not ordinary. Why? Because of the presence of Krishna. So they had great devotion for Krishna, and Krishna accepted their great devotion. Prabhupada writes, they were his unalloyed devotees. It appears that the prostitutes of Dwaraka, who were so eager to meet the Lord, were all his unalloyed devotees. And thus they were all on the path of salvation, according to the above verse of Bhagavad Gita 9.32. He gives a very interesting translation of 9.32. It's not a literal translation. Here's what he writes. O son of Pratha, Krishna is speaking, even the low-born chandalas and those who are born in a family of unbelievers and even the prostitutes shall attain perfection of life if they take shelter of the unalloyed devotional service to me, because in the path of devotional service there are no impediments due to degraded birth and occupation. The path is open for everyone who agrees to follow it. So, their profession wasn't nice, but their devotion was. And Krishna accepted their devotion. Okay. So, I think I've taken up more than my allotted time. Any comments? Or questions? Yes. Yeah. Can we turn the fan off? I can hear better. I don't understand it. It's difficult to understand. But some devotion was there, because she became liberated from that situation. Yes.
Maharaj, there's a description that in the Kali Yuga, whatever offenses we commit in the mind is not so much counted. I think very often about this, because the mind is so difficult to control and we're doing so many things. So we have a hope that by doing all these things, one day we'll be purified. But from your description today, it seems that the...
We're responsible. We're not responsible in a one-to-one karma bondage thing. But if your mind... is what follows thinking by contemplation of the objects of the senses. Oh, I'm not responsible. I can think of the objects of the senses, but it doesn't stop there. It's the domino effect. It's just one follows the other, and boom. And at the time of death, which could come at any moment, some moment it will come. And what is our mind? What is our mind fixed upon? It's not, you know, gambling. Maybe it'll be a 1, and maybe it'll be a 7, maybe it'll be 11. Come on, we don't gamble. So we practice. So the fact that we're not responsible for mental offenses doesn't mean we can do whatever we want. You know, we don't have to worry about what happens with the mind. It's a dispensation for this age of Kali that we need not be held responsible on that platform. Yes. I'm listening carefully, but I don't follow what your question is. The circumstance, these are devotees, they're Prabhupada is giving them the title of devotees, in fact, unalloyed devotees, but they're not following what we call the regular principles. So now what's your question? Certainly, one who has devotion, that's the most important thing. It will follow in course of time. Just like this example where the prostitute became freed from that occupation. By Krishna's arrangement. So if there's, we may be in an unfortunate position, say regular principles wise. But if our devotion is strong, Krishna will relieve us of that circumstance, or at least the inability to control our senses in that circumstance. Does that address your question? That doesn't mean, oh, we don't have to worry about the regular principles. It means that if we're having some difficulty with regular principles, for whatever the reason, we're not, in Krishna's eyes, finished, useless, trashed. But Krishna sees the devotion, and Krishna will, if we try to strengthen and act more attentively on the platform of devotion, we'll get the needed strength to overcome that difficulty. And it works the other way. The following regular principles helps to make the atmosphere of goodness in our life more predominant, so that the awakening of devotion is more likely, more possible. One helps the other, and vice versa. But of the two, the most important is bhakti. When Prabhupada, for example, when Prabhupada first started introducing the young counterculture people of the Lower East Side in New York, he didn't start with regular principles. He started with the holy name and captured their hearts with his purity, his transcendental qualities. He just won their hearts. And then following the principles followed from that. Anyone else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.